Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening. Welcome to another episode of All About Service Dogs, hosted by your host, yours truly, Doc Venzel. Tonight's show, we have Ted Carlson. He'll be with us tonight, and he'll be sharing with us about his processes and things he's doing with his training business. And we'll get the crossover, and we'll see just what it can do for us and see what kind of information we can get out of him that might help us in some of our issues. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and thank you for sharing. During the process of the show or right now, please press the follow button so that we know you stopped in. I get a general count, but if you press the follow button, then I'll actually know who you are. And you can get updates about when we're going to be on and who the guest is and what the topic's going to be. So show us some love and press that follow button. And while you're at it, call a friend. Tell them they need to listen to Ted. Now, if you need to get up and go somewhere within the next hour, you can take us with you. You can call 646-668-2499, and then you can listen on your phone. And so that'll be a good thing for you. You just call that, you can listen, then you can be mobile, and you're not stuck by your computer. All righty. Well, Mr. Ted Carlson, greet the people and give us a little introduction to Ted Carlson Dog Training.
All right. Thanks, Doc. Thanks, everyone listening. Thanks for having me. Yeah, my name's Ted Carlson of Ted Carlson Dog Training. I'm located in Mandeville, Louisiana. I'm a balanced dog trainer, which means I believe in the, consequence for the correct behavior and the incorrect behavior. I do a ton of pet obedience, behavior modification, and rehabilitation. I rehabilitate dogs from anxiety to stress to aggression on a daily basis. And I also do a lot of puppy stuff, building manners and, kind of just the fundamental skills, as well as doing basic and advanced obedience. I train police dogs, service dogs, search and rescue dogs, you name it. If it's a dog, I train it.
Very cool, very cool. Ted, I read somewhere that you also give webinars to handlers. And
I do, that's right. Yep, I do a ton. I put a ton of stuff out there. So, the best way to follow me is find me on Facebook. I put a ton of content up. I put up what I'm doing almost on a daily basis. So find me on Facebook. That's the best way to follow me. I also do a blog on Medium. You can go to medium.com and search Ted Carlson Dog Training on there. Find me there. I'm on Instagram at Ted Carlson Dog Training. And then I'm on Periscope at Ted Carlson. You can follow me on there. I do live training sessions almost daily, as well as a live Q&A where people can get on Periscope, ask me any of their dog training questions, and I answer them live right there. You can also get on my Facebook page before that and ask your questions. When I post when the next Q&A is going to be, you can ask your question right there in the comments and make sure that they get on the show too. So I do a live Q&A, and really anything from pet obedience to bratty behavior to working dogs and service dogs. Get your questions in, and I can get them answered.
Okay. It seems like this might be the week for folks who are doing webinars on Periscope. Now,
Periscope is awesome. Periscope is a really great way to get in touch with everyone, and the awesome thing about it is you go on there, you find me at Ted Carlson, you can turn on the notifications, and every time I come live, you get notified right on your phone.
Pretty cool, pretty cool. I had a trainer on when must have been a Monday night. Could have been Friday. But he also does webinars on Periscope. And I said, I might need to check that out because I like the idea of the visual. You know, this radio is good, but when you're as good looking as me, a visual is what's happening.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Ted, let's talk about how did you get into dog training and what was your, you know, what was your process of saying, I think I'll be a dog trainer?
Yeah, well, you know, dog training is what I've done my entire adult life. I'm an Air Force vet. I did 10 years in the Air Force, and 8 years of that was spent as an Air Force military working dog handler. I worked as a police dog handler, working, you know, explosive detection dogs, narcotic detection dogs, did 3 tours overseas with that, became a military working dog trainer, and then a couple of years ago, I separated from the Air Force and started my own business. While I was in, I started working with some, you know, I worked with military dogs. I worked with some local agencies working with their police dogs, was able to travel and work with a ton of different, you know, federal agencies. And then I got into the pet dog side of it while I was in. And when I went ahead and separated from the military, that's when I stuck with the pet dog thing. So now I do a lot of pet dogs. I have worked, you know, with police agencies, and I also have trained police dogs that are in active service now. But mainly what my main business is right now is pet dogs and rehabilitating a lot of aggression. So that's where I got my start, and that's where I am now.
That is crazy interesting. I'm just a little bit jealous because, you know, I had to actually do soldiering when I was in the service. And I didn't get to play with the dogs, but that's cool. I ain't mad at you.
Yeah, good. Well, thank you for your service.
Well, thank you. And did you have an interest in dogs before you got in the Air Force and that kind of just fell in?
Yeah, you know, I've had dogs my whole life. You know, actually, my childhood dog, I got a tattoo of him and everything. So, you know, I've had dogs my whole life, been around dogs as long as I can remember. It's always just been a big part of my life. You know, when I joined the military, I joined as a cop, but I knew immediately I had to get into canine, and I did as soon as I possibly could.
Well, that's cool. That's a good route to go, and that's a good foundation to have. Let me ask you this. With your civilian dog training, you said you do some puppy stuff, you do some basic and advanced obedience. Is any of those obedience through the dog trials, through the AKC or the UKC? Or
yeah, I am. I'm an AKC Canine Good Citizen Evaluator, so you know, I can do that for any dog that comes through. If I get a dog in that the owner specifically wants to do Canine Good Citizen, we do that. I have other clients that have done just the Canine Good Citizen test itself. They're already prepared. So I do that. And then I work with some of the therapy dogs around. I work with a few of my clients are therapy dogs and have gone on to even advanced therapy certifications and that sort of thing too, which, you know, AKC is a prerequisite for that stuff.
Right. Let's see. I want to chase down that AKC a little bit. Do me a favor and take a minute and convince me, and when I say me, I mean people that's listening, because as an evaluator, I'm already convinced, but I need somebody else to do some talking on the same thing, because, you know, if they hear me say it all the time, they get tone deaf. But when they hear another person say it, maybe they say, can listen in. But convince me, a owner, trainer, service dog handler, why I should pursue the Canine Good Citizen title.
Yeah, you know, so as a service dog handler, I mean, you have to. You, it's just something you have to do. But as the typical pet dog owner, it's something you definitely want to do. And the reasons for that are it gives you the I guess the testing items to tell whether or not you have a dog that's, you know, possibly cut out for some further work or to put a little bit more you know, effort into. So I mean, it gives you those, you know, 10 test items that say if your dog can pass these items, they're a canine good citizen or urban canine good citizen or whatever it is you ended up passing, which kind of lays the groundwork for where you are. So if you have a hard time, you know, making those test items, you're going to have a hard time doing anything advanced past that. But if you're able to go ahead and get that training in and get those things done, then, you know, the sky's the limit. You can go past there. So I think it's an awesome way to kind of judge where you are as a dog owner, a dog team, a dog handler, and get those test items done and strive to pass those test items. And then, you know, where you want to go after that is all up to you. So I think it's just a great way to kind of judge who you are and where you're at and where you need to be to reach your goals.
Okay, what if I don't want nobody judging me? What if, you know, I think I can do it just as good as you, and
you know,
the ADA says I don't have to have any kind of certification, and I train my own dog.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, to start with, that's probably a bad attitude to have, you know, as a dog handler or a service dog handler or a dog owner to begin with. But if that is the mentality, you know, you have, then go ahead and do it yourself. Get a buddy to come over, print out the 10 testing items, and see if you're there, and you can see without actually having a, you know, evaluator there to evaluate you if you're even there. But you know, I mean, just because you don't have to actually get your title to do those 10 items, you know, you can watch the video on YouTube, go through it yourself with your friend and see if you're even there. But yeah, I think that if you're trying to go the road alone, you're already kind of in the wrong mindset.
Well, all righty, Mr. Ted. Hey, y'all heard that from Ted Carlson. Doc didn't say it because Doc don't have the nerve, but Ted says he's just here for the night. He's got an hour. He's going to give it to you how it is. And I so appreciate you slapping that down. What I tell folks, Ted, and you could agree or disagree, and that's cool, is in today's world where more and more states are putting down laws on fake service dogs, you might be challenged and have to show
that
your dog
is trained.
I think
it's going to be sooner than later.
And, well, nowadays you could be challenged that your dog is trained. And, you know, if you want to go on an airline or if you want to go into a housing place where you're renting, your word is not good enough. You know, no, there's no national certification, but you have to document the dog's training. And if your dog ever lets you down and has a lapse in training, if you don't have something that says, you know what, you know, this was a lapse in training, this is not something that the dog does or a hurdle that the dog's never been over, you know, look, on this day right here, my dog was tested by a third party, and boom, it's not just me saying it, it's this third party out here saying it. And for me, you know, that's what I tell people, you know, it brings about good credibility. And it's a third party, it's another set of eyes that says, the dog can do this. The dog has done that. And so, you know.
Yeah, you know, 100%. I think you definitely want to have that ammo behind you in case somebody does come and say, you know, I want to question your reliability. So, yeah, you definitely want to have that stuff behind you. You know, you want to have all your paperwork and all your training records and your logs and your canine good citizen test and all that stuff, you know, ready to be presented as you need to. But, I think you bring up a really good point about service dog selection, and I think that's where a lot of people are lacking right now in selecting the dogs that they're deciding to be service dogs. You know, I think that there's a lot of people with pet dogs that they want to become a service dog, and I don't think that's the right way to go about it. I think you should be selecting a dog to be your service dog versus just your buddy that now you want to take into, you know, stores and on airlines and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think, you know, both of that, you know, one, you definitely want to have the ammo behind you in case someone does question your reliability. But I think you want to take a proactive approach on that and get the best dog you can so that, you know, your reliability doesn't come into question.
Yeah, there you go. And the thing about choosing a dog and the right way to choose a dog, you know, a lot of people have different opinions. What's your opinion as a professional dog person, a dog trainer, if you will? How would you go about helping somebody if they came to you, they said, hey, Ted, I'm going to need a service dog, and little Fifi is not going to get it. You know, mm-hmm. Fifi's really good around the house. I love Fifi, but Fifi's probably not going to be the best for me in my needs as a service dog. Walk us through what you would do with the person that comes to you saying, hey, it looks like I'm going to be needing a service dog, and mm-hmm. I want you to help me train it. So help me pick one out that's a good one.
Yeah, you know, the first thing I would be doing is I'm looking to the reputable breeders that I personally know. And that's where I'm going first. And I'm going to talk to them about the lines of the dog, where they come from, the temperament of the parents, the temperament of their parents. And I'm just going to go down the line, and I'm going to find the dog that I believe will have the best temperament and be as structurally and behaviorally sound as possible and start from there. You know, I would go the route of finding a reputable breeder to start with, as well as, you know, finding a dog that's going to fit the needs. I mean, you know, because if we're doing, you know, mobility assistance, you're definitely going to need a dog that has some sort of structure to carry the weight of an adult human being. So, you know, there's that to go with it too. But yeah, I think you want to make sure that your dog's mind is right before we even get into any training and get the dog that's going to be set up for success as much as possible. And I mean, getting dogs from rescues can be really, really great. You can get a ton of dogs out of the rescue, which is the worst place a dog could be. You can get somebody that needs a dog for, you know, relatively inexpensive. And that stuff. So there is a ton of really great stuff that can go with finding rescue dogs. But at the same time, you can fall into a lot of other issues with your rescue dogs that's just going to put a giant, you know, roadblock in the way of becoming a service dog. So I think you want to be really, really careful when you're looking at, you know, rescue dogs or backyard breeders or your pet dog when it comes to making them a service dog. And I think that if it's something that you genuinely need, that you should be looking at the best possible outcome right from the get-go, which I think would be a reputable breeder.
That's great. Now, we just did something there that I want to back up, and I want to shed a spotlight on it because some people might have missed it. What we did was we talked to a professional trainer, and we said, help me find a dog. Now, that trainer, one, he knows what he's looking for. After listening to you, he knows what you're needing, and he knows what to look for in the dog. And he also knows some good breeders in the area. And he knows breeders of the types of dogs that would be helpful to you. He probably has also done some work somewhere with dogs from different rescue organizations that are in the area, and the pounds, and I don't even know, how do you call that, the place where they pick your dog up and they put him in there, and then somebody comes and says, this dog going to die, the shelters, and the ASPCA people.
Yeah.
So then the professional trainer knows a little bit about these people, and they know about the dogs and all that. And this person is not emotionally attached to any of these dogs. So he's picking a dog based on functionality and based on the temperament and that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that is why it's a good idea to work with a trainer, because professional eye to help you get what you need.
Yeah, and you know, it's if you can do the you know, owner trainer or handler trainer stuff, you know, I don't think you can. I don't think you can go that road alone. I think you need professional help to get you there, because if you could train a service dog from a pup to a service dog by yourself, you would be a professional dog trainer. That's what you would be doing. You know, whether it be, you know, you don't have the skill or the talent or the physical ability to do it, you know, you need help. You need professional help to get there. Whether that be just the obedience stuff or the actual service tasks, I just don't think that you can go that road alone. You've got to find some outside help to get you there.
Well, Ted, I agree with you, but I got about probably 400 people listening that don't, because they think that they can watch a video, read a book, and do this thing all by themselves. That's what they think. And a lot of them have owner-trained dogs that they train, and they're proud of it. And they'll fight you if you say anything different.
Well, you know, and more power to them. If you were able to get your dog and get there, awesome. I mean, that's an incredible accomplishment. I think that's really great for you. But I think the typical person does need at least a little bit of help or a little bit of guidance to get there. Even if it's not hands-on stuff, I mean, that's why I do my Periscope Q&As. I mean, I do Skype consultations. So even if you just need someone to sit down and talk to for a couple hours about, you know, a hurdle that you might have come across, you know, I think that you should be reaching out versus just kind of doing your way. And the thing is, too, you know, if you got your dog that your owner training and you're doing all that and you're doing a really great job of it, professionals have seen hundreds and hundreds and thousands of dogs. So maybe your little situation isn't super unique. So, you know, give a call or an email or something to a professional and at least ask for a little bit of advice when you do come to those roadblocks.
Yep. Hey, I'm with you 100-fold. Matter of fact, I'm a little bit even beyond you because, you know, I'm a program guy that also does private training. But outside eye, because a lot of the tasks, you can't train and be doing what your dog needs done at the same time, because, you know, if, you know, you have a seizure dog, you can't do your seizure thing and train the dog and shape the dog's behavior at the same time.
Right.
You know, different things, you just, it's not good to go alone. You can mess up a really good dog trying it yourself. And a lot of owner trainers, you probably see this online on Facebook, as I see on Facebook, and not just owner trainers, but a lot of just regular pet owners are ruining their dogs by what they do, and you don't know you're ruining the dog by what you're doing, because you don't know it's not a good thing to do.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, a lot of the people I talk to, you know, I kind of just tell them how it is, and it's almost like they had an epiphany. Oh, I never really thought about it that way. You know, I'm glad you actually had to, you know, came out and said it. So that's a lot of what it is. It's stuff that, you know, might be something you just didn't think about at the time, but someone else comes in and says it, and you, oh, man, I didn't really think about it that way. So, yeah, 100%, you know, and you need to be looking for at least a little bit of help.
Okay. Normally I save this part till a little bit in the end, but we're kind of right on the door of it anyway. So take a minute, Ted. And when I say a minute, I don't mean 60 seconds. I mean like a moment. Take some time and express the importance of trainer-assisted training for your service dog in particular?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of already hit on it. You know, there's definitely tasks that you can't get done by yourself. And then on the other side of it, you know, stuff that maybe you just aren't physically able to do on your own, you know, whether you have, you know, mobility issues or illness and that sort of thing too. So you're definitely going to need help in those parts where it's things that you just can't do by yourself. It just can't be done. It's impossible. But then on the other side of it, stuff you haven't seen. I mean, I get dogs that come through, you know, sometimes dozens a day that I see, and I just get to see a ton of different dogs and a ton of different behavior and a ton of different personalities and might get you there the quickest. So one of the other things is too, you know, you might be able to get to the end, but I can help you get there a lot faster with a lot less confusion and possibly a lot less harm done on the dog's part. So if we can get to the end result as easy and confusion and conflict free, why wouldn't we do that? You know, even if you can get to there by yourself, we can get there a lot sooner if you look for a little bit of outside help.
Okay. Now you got me leaning on this question, which a lot of people ask, and you have to answer it even if people don't ask it. But why should I pay you to do what I can get from the videos for free?
Yeah, you know, and watch your videos and learn as much as you can, but you show me one video and I can show you to get the same spot in five different ways. Every dog's different, and that's the thing. You can't take your only method to train every single dog. That doesn't exist. There is no one method to train every dog. And, you know, really, in my belief, any trainer that's out there telling you my method trains every single dog's is wrong. Every dog is different. You know, every dog is going to take a different tool, a different type of motivation. They're going to have a different energy level. Every dog is going to be different. So you can watch a video that somebody put out online of them with their demo dog that got the video done, but then you try to apply it and your dog has a different energy level, not motivated by the same things you saw in the video, and you're not getting the end result. And you're possibly causing more harm, too, in the time by trying to emulate what someone else is doing, but it's not transferring to your dog, and ultimately hurting your relationship. And if you do plan on that being your service dog, you know, hurting your relationship is the last thing you should be doing.
Wow, I'm ready to write a check right there. I don't want to mess up my dog. Okay, well, let's check this out. Let's move a little bit. Talk a little bit about your webinars. Let's see if we can touch on that and see what kind of interest. Who is your target audience for your webinars?
Yeah, so my webinar, you know, the main reason I started doing the webinar was because I want to be able to reach out to as many people as I can, you know. And like I said, I'm located in Mandeville, Louisiana. I have a huge client base here. I got a ton of people around here. But I train dogs from all over the country, whether it be dogs being sent to me, whether it be me traveling, whether it be, you know, Skype consultations or whatever it is, emails, phone calls, training dogs all over the country. So what I wanted to do with my Periscope Q&As was I want to be able to reach out to as many different people as possible to get your dog trained. You know, even if you can't get your dog to me or you don't have a trainer in your area that you trust, you know, to get you the info you need, get your dog trained, you know, even if it is over just a couple Q&A things. I also get a ton of people on there asking questions about behavior issues, whether it be digging or barking or fighting with the kids or whatever it is, people looking for advice because people want to restore peace to their household. So getting on my Q&A and asking me a question on an hour, hour and a half, or whatever I happen to be on there, might help you restore some of that peace to your household. So, you know, I mainly get the pet dog people on there, but I also, you know, can get police or service or, you know, search and rescue handlers on there too. So really it's able to get as much info out to the general public as possible so that people don't run into these issues. And you know, that's another thing too. You know, they might have seen a video or read a book or whatever, and it's not transferring over to their dog. So it gives people the opportunity to ask a professional how to do it. And the best thing is it's free. You know, you get on there, you ask me a question, I answer it, and you didn't pay a dollar. You know, so that's the other good thing too. You know, you get a lot of information out there, you get what you need, and you don't got to pay for it.
Well, that helps answer a question a little bit. Now, you've been doing this webinar for probably a little bit of time, and you've been training for a while. Tell me, what are some common questions that you get and maybe some common answers that you give to those questions?
Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, I get, you know, the questions I get are all over the scale, you know, whether it be digging or barking or aggression or anxiety or stress or whatever it is. But I think that a lot of those questions lead back to just the same few answers. I think a lot of the issues that people have are all answered almost the same way. And I think the biggest thing is not having a strong foundation in your dog, you know, and that the foundation is sit and down and coming when called, and being a calm house dog, you know. So putting in that foundation, putting in the time to train your dog normally gets rid of a lot of little behaviors, you know. Giving your dog a list of 4 or 5 things that you like for them to do, they start to offer those behaviors to you, and they stop offering you the behaviors that they, you know, were trying to do that aren't really compatible with our life, like incessant barking and digging and chewing on my coffee table and that sort of stuff. So they stop offering those little behaviors. If we give them behaviors that they should be offering, like sit and down and place and come in when called and walking politely at my side and that sort of thing. So I think that's the biggest answer to most questions that people call me and email me and hire me for. And I think another big issue that a lot of, not just service dog people, but any dog owner has, is they have trouble balancing discipline and affection with their dogs. Everybody wants to love their dog. I mean, that's why they get dogs, is because they want to love them. But they forget about the discipline side of it. And what comes out of that is a undisciplined, bratty dog that does whatever they want to do and are extremely resistant to any sort of pressure. So you need to balance that discipline and affection. So if you're a 10 out of 10 on the affection scale, that means you got to be a 10 out of 10 on the discipline scale, which is probably pretty difficult. And at the same time, if you can only be a 1 on the discipline scale, you got to be a 1 on the affection. So what I suggest is you got to be middle of the road with all that stuff, you know, be a 5 or 6 on the affection scale and a 5 or 6 on the discipline scale, and give the dog the balance they need in their life to not be, you know, an entitled brat and do those bratty behaviors that we don't want them to do. So I think that's probably the two biggest answers to almost every question I get. You know, put a strong foundation in your dog of the stuff you want them to do, and then also balancing your affection and discipline. Don't give them a ton of liberties if they're not earning them, and at the same time, don't be a big jerk just being mean to your dog and yelling all the time and not showing them any affection either.
Okay, do me a favor here. You showed me how to pick out this service dog candidate, this little puppy. Now, I have a puppy that's going to be a service dog. Take me step by step, if you will, and give me a little box, a little template that I could run with on how to get that puppy from week 8 when I get it to, you know, the service dog in a year and a half,
yeah,
or year,
sure,
or however long it is.
Right, sure.
What should
you
I
know,
do?
And the first thing you got to be doing with your pup, you know, your 8-week-old dog, is, you know, working on, you know, basic manners, leash manners, crate training, house training, you know, not incessant barking, not playing too rough and all that stuff. Work on just the basic stuff there, the easy puppy stuff. And then once your dog gets to, you know, 3 or 4 months old, is when you can actually start doing some formal training, and that's when you got to put that foundation in there. That's when you want to work on a strong sit down, walking politely on leash, or maybe even a nice heel, you know, and working in that foundation. And those foundational skills are what you're going to build every other skill off of, every other task off of. And if you build a strong foundation, you can build a very, very tall building on top of that foundation. So put your effort in there to the basic obedience, the strong foundation stuff, and then start working on your service tasks. And that's when I would start working on the actual service-related tasks after I knew my foundation was rock solid. I knew that it was airtight. And then once you start working on your service tasks, I think what you want to do is start chaining those behaviors and start at the easier ones and then start working on more difficult and more complex tasks as the dog is succeeding and maturing and all that stuff, so you don't really overload them. And I think if you take a gradual climb to where you want to be and where you want your dog to be, I think you'll get there very quickly. But I think if you try to dive in too much too soon, and you're trying to jump steps and you're trying to get to the end goal too fast, I think you're going to meet a lot of resistance and have a lot of trouble getting to where you want to be. So, you know, successive approximation, work your way up to where you want to be, and you know, gradually get there versus, you know, trying to sprint to the finish line with it. And if that means your service dog takes 18 months or 24 months to get there, that's what it takes, you know. But at least you did it the right way, not necessarily the fast way.
Okay. Let me do this, and then we'll go back there. You mentioned crate training. I am resistant to locking my dog up. My dog should be free to have the run of the house and all this here. I'm a little light on my discipline side, which you already spoke to, but I'm going to act like I didn't hear that. Talk to me about why do I need to do crate training?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a couple of reasons. You know, one is safety. You know, if there is a reason that the dog needs to be in a crate or whatever, you want them to be as prepared as possible to be in that crate. Whether it's, you know, guests are over or there's workers in the house or whatever it is, you always want to be prepared if that's what you need to do with your dog. But on the other side of that, on what you kind of hit on there, was if you want your dog to be free to have run of the house, is your dog also free to chew on your couch? Is your dog also free to bark incessantly out the window? Is your dog also free to pee in the house, you know, and do all that stuff? So if you think that your dog should be free to do whatever they want to do, your dog will do whatever they want to do. And then when you try to stop that behavior, it's going to come out in some pretty nasty ways, like barking and growling and snapping and biting, because that's how dogs meet resistance, with the things that dogs know how to do. And dogs have claws and dogs have teeth and dogs have voices. So that's what they use to get their point across. So I think if you give your dog all of those freedoms and say that, oh, my dog can do whatever they want to do whenever they want to do it, your dog will do whatever it wants to do, whenever it wants to do it. And then when you try to stop that behavior because you let it too far, you know, your dog's going to meet that with a ton of resistance. So I think that crate training is a healthy place for dogs to be. Crate training is a safe place for dogs to be. And I think it's also a great way to manage your dog when, one, you don't necessarily need them, or two, they might be getting into a little bit of, you know, a hyper state of mind or at least arousal. And you can use it as a management tool to calm them down a little bit and get them back into that calm state of mind like they should be, and then they can focus on their service tasks again.
All right, I'd love to pitch that one up because there is a lot of pushback on the crate, and I don't get it myself, but, you know, after listening to the people, you know, where they're coming from, he's, okay, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, you know, you want your dog by you, and that's why you have them and all that stuff. But at the same time, if it's an unhealthy thing, then you can't be doing it. But, you know, a big thing, too, that I try to push across to a lot of people is if you don't have a problem, you don't have to fix it. Now doing things can definitely lead to problems down the road, for sure. But, you know, people sometimes ask, well, should I be doing this with my dog or should I be doing that? And if you don't have negative fallout coming from your dog, you don't have to put a ton of structure in there. I mean, dogs definitely strive from some sort of structure in their lives, but some dogs need much, much more structure than other dogs do. So if you don't have a problem with allowing your dog to, you know, roam the house and then sleep in their bed when you tell them to go sleep in their bed, then maybe you don't have to worry about the crate training thing too much. But if you do have a dog that does have negative fallout, I'm willing to bet that that's one of the areas that will help your dog along.
Yep. I'm going to help you out. I'm going to sing alongside with you a little bit. We're going to do a duet. I like to tell people some of the same things you said about the crate and add to it that a dog is a domesticated wolf, if you will, and a wolf is a den animal. They like a den. That's his little private place. You want your little private place. And I like to say to mothers, because I deal with a lot of mothers, because my service dogs are for kids. And it's like, you know, when you get the feeling, you know, can I go anywhere and get some peace? I can't go anywhere and get peace. You know, that's how the dog feels sometimes. And so when you give them their crate, that's not a punishment deal. It is a management tool that you might use for management, but it's not punishment. It's protection for the dog. Excuse me. It's giving the dog what it needs. It's a time and place where the dog can just say, you know what? I'm not on duty. I'm just chilling. You know, I need a time out. He could go give himself a time out. And
no, that's definitely
it's a
right
beautiful
too.
Thing. We don't have to look at it as, you know, I'm imprisoning my dog. I'm giving my dog what it needs.
Yep, and if your dog is comfortable in their crate, then even better. You know, why not let them go in there? Now, of course, there's going to be issues if your dog goes in the crate and they refuse to leave and that sort of thing. Yeah, that's definitely, you know, some bratty entitled behavior. But no, if your dog goes in the crate when you tell them to, or they even go in there on their own and they enjoy their crate and all that stuff, why not give them something that does make them feel comfortable and peaceful and definitely help aid that calm state of mind that we want?
Yep, and I always say if you crate train them properly, then the crate is going to be a positive thing and not a negative thing. If the only time they're going in their crate is when somebody comes to the door, then they're going to see that as a negative thing, because when that bell rings, now all of a sudden I have to go to jail. You know, any other time I get to run their house. But so it's all in how we do it. Now, you brought this up a little bit ago, but you said that the majority of your clients are right there in Mandeville, and I'm trying to remember where that is in Louisiana, because that one is news to me.
Mandeville is just north of New Orleans. We on the north side of New Orleans, there's Lake Pontchartrain, and then we are on the north shore of Lake Pontchartrain. So you cross New Orleans, you go over to Lake Pontchartrain Causeway Bridge, and we are on the opposite side of that bridge. So we're about 30 minutes drive till you're in New Orleans. Just north of New Orleans.
I just had a brain cramp. That's all. I should have known that. I lived in New Orleans 2 years. And, of course, I was in central Louisiana, and I was over there in west Louisiana. So I knew a little bit about what was going on in Louisiana. So that's where the basic bulk of your clients are. But you said you do travel as well. Now, when you travel, are you traveling to clients, or are you traveling to teach, or what's that traveling
about? Yeah,
I do
private seminars. I can be hired for private seminars. I also do private group seminars where people can hire me to come and speak with their group, whether it be, you know, a rescue group, a working dog group, a service dog group, or just a group of friends. But I do private group seminars as well, where you can hire me to come out, and we would do that. Those are typically like a 2-day thing. But yeah, if I need to be, if you know, I need to travel for a dog, that's definitely an option for me. So just because I do live in Mandeville, Louisiana, does not mean that I don't travel to train.
All right. Now let's go back to your base there in Mandeville. You mentioned a little bit about board and train. Now, you do board and train there at your place, or you board them somewhere and train them, or how you do that?
No, they're with me. I have a training room and facility right here on my property, and you know, I take in anywhere from, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 dogs at a time. I also do day training, where some dogs get dropped off during the day and picked up in the evening. But yeah, dogs that come through here for I call it stay and train, because they're not in in a boarding kennel, come here for anywhere from, you know, 2 weeks to, you know, months or however long they need to be to complete their training.
Okay, well, cool. Now, let me ask this just to make sure. Do you do any breeding or just training?
No, I don't breed. I have reputable breeders that I know all over the country. I do not breed.
Okay, cool. Now, are you in any group of trainers there in Louisiana or New Orleans,
no,
for that matter?
No, I work with handlers and dog teams from a ton of different organizations around here. You know, I work with the Louisiana Search and Rescue Task Force, police handlers and stuff, but I'm not a member of any of the clubs or organizations here.
All right. And you are sounding a whole lot like a another guy, and I know you're a different guy, but and he's from Louisiana, and I was looking back at my previous show notes to see if I could find him. I can't find him. Maybe he's listening. He'll send me a message and say, yeah, Doc, that's me. But it's just so funny how, you know, after doing this show for such a while, how a lot of us, we sound a lot alike.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes you think, wow, I must be doing something right. Oh, my goodness, I must be doing something wrong. Everybody's agreeing with
me.
Yeah. You know, I'm not on the cutting edge anymore. Well, uh-oh, I got to do some more study or something. But that's interesting. Okay, so I'm looking at my clock here, and time is just flying by, and we're just having a good old conversation. And I want you to be able to present the message that you want to present, and I want you to be seen as the person you want to be seen as. So take a little time, and knowing that you're talking to the service dog world, and these are handlers, owner trainers, other trainers, program directors, program trainers, people that live with somebody who has a service dog, and people that are looking to see if they want to get a service dog, and some breeders I have that listen in. That's your audience. That's who you're talking to. Talk to these people for a bit and just share some things that you think maybe they need to hear. Maybe from your observation, it looks like they need to hear it, or maybe, you know, it's just, you know, the flag that you fly that you want to make sure that people hear. You know, just be free to communicate with the people a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, again, you know, thanks to everyone that's listening and has listened to me for the last, you know, 50 minutes or whatever I've been talking. So, but yeah, I mean, when it comes to any sort of dog training, you know, there's definitely a right way and a wrong way to go about it. And, you know, there's a way that your dog will learn best and there's a way that your dog won't learn best. And I think that's why you need to be open to different training and methodologies and tools that are out there. So I think if anyone's coming into it saying that, you know, I only have my way or the only way that I believe in to train dogs, I think you're really backing yourself into a corner that way. And that's why I'm a balanced trainer. That's why I believe in consequences for correct and incorrect behavior. And that's why I use everything from food to hot dogs to prong collars to remote collars to clickers and whatever it may be. I use any tool that's going to get the dog to where they need to be as quickly and confusion-free as possible, because I think anything other than that is unfair. I think that anything other than that is even borderline inhumane to not give your dog all the information necessary. So if you're training your own dog, for whether it be, you know, your financial reasons or whatever it is, you really need to be thinking about that stuff and not backing yourself into a corner by saying that I only believe in one particular method. You know, and that's what I think that's what you need to be thinking about. And then, you know, once you do have your dog and you're training it and everything, you need to focus on that foundation and get that foundation rock solid. And, you know, like I said before, the stronger the foundation you build, the taller building you can build on that. So if you have a really weak foundation, expect a very weak dog after that. But if you build a very strong foundation, you know, as far as genetics will let you get, you can build a very, very strong dog out of that. So I think that's definitely some things you want to be thinking about and using, you know, reaching out and using, you know, your friends and your community and professional trainers to help you get to where you need to be. You know, and even before you have that dog, again, you know, the service dog selection, you really got to be thinking about what dog you need and then kind of backtrack to what dog you need to get. So, you know, go to reputable breeders, be careful with rescues, you know, probably don't train your pet just because you love them and that sort of thing. And get the dog that's actually going to be a good service dog, because when you do go and you get, you know, just some shelter dog that maybe fit your needs or a backyard breeder that, you know, has been, you know, maybe not breeding it as properly as they should for the past couple of years and that sort of thing. You discredit everybody that does have a really well-trained service dog. So if you're going to get into the community of service dogs, I think you need to make sure that you're benefiting the community by training your dog properly and shining a really good light on service dogs, because like what you had on earlier, I think pretty soon there are going to be laws and regulations put in place to make sure people are doing the right thing. So, you know, doing that stuff. And I think that, you know, the dog's state of mind is just as important as doing all the service dog tasks, if not a little bit more. So making sure your dog has a calm state of mind, a sound temperament, and not doing a ton of bratty, entitled behavior stuff, you know? So I think that's what you want to be thinking about. And, you know, again, coming back to me, if you need to reach out, reach out. You know, find me on Facebook. You're on Facebook, look at Ted Carlson Dog Training. You can see everything I'm all about on there. I post a ton of stuff. That's the best way to keep in touch with me. Check me out on Instagram, at Ted Carlson Dog Training, and then Periscope. Follow me on Periscope, at Ted Carlson. I do live training sessions, which always have a Q&A at the end of those as well. And then I do a live Q&A on Periscope for anybody that has any questions. So I also do Skype consultations if you're not in the area, if you can't get your dog to me for whatever reason. So, you know, I'm out there to help get you where you need to be. So, you know, reach out and find me on one of those things, and we can get your dog where they need to be.
Well, that is super, and way to anticipate whatever I'm going to say next, because you surely did that. Wow, let's see. Oh, okay. I do have a question for you. I'm going to ask the question, then I'm going to give you a second to think about it while I make an announcement, and then we'll let you speak on the question. A lot of people who are either training their own dog or trainer assisting training their own dog or even got a dog from a program, they start seeing issues with their dog. Now, my question for you is, give me some thoughts on when to wash your dog out of training and what to do before washing the dog out of training because of, you know, certain behaviors or whatnot. And while you think and get your thoughts right on that, let me just say, hey, folks, if you have a question or comment for Ted Carlson, go ahead and give me a call, 646-668-2499. Give me a call, and once you're into the switchboard, go ahead and press the number 1 on your keyboard, your phone's keyboard, and we'll get you in and see about what your question or comment is. Now, I am told, haven't done this yet, but I'm told that you can even Skype in. I'd love to have somebody Skype in just so I know it works, right? And you can Skype in at that same number, 646-668-2499. And come on in and ask your question, give your comment, and we'll give you just a little bit of time as I give Ted a moment to answer the question that I just posed, and we'll see if anybody calls in. Okay, Ted, go ahead for me.
Yeah, you know, and definitely to kind of piggyback on what you just said, definitely, you know, people call in because answering questions is what I love to do. So, you know, any question you have, even if it's anything I went over today, you know, definitely please feel free to call in and let me know. But washout dogs, yeah, definitely. If you got a dog that you don't think is going to cut it, start documenting, you know, immediately. You know, even if it's stuff just kind of, you know, just little things that are, you know, now all of a sudden I'm having a lot of pushback just doing basic obedience stuff. Start documenting that stuff, because what you want to be able to do is you want to go back and see trends, not only trends in your dog, but trends in yourself and your training of what you've done. You know, and what I do with a lot of people is, you know, if we start seeing, let's just say a random trend for, you know, downstays have really fallen off for whatever reason. Looking back in records a little bit, you see, okay, downstays were falling off. Then I didn't really pick up on them, and I didn't put the effort, the remedial effort I needed to into the dog, and they continued to fall, and now we have a problem. And that could be with any task, too, you know. Let's just say light switches, for instance. You know, was having an issue with light switches, didn't put the remedial effort in, and now I'm having a real problem. And I can look back on my records and see that. So that's stuff we can definitely fix if you can look back and see where the problem started and what you could have done to rectify it then. But as far as when it's time to wash a dog out, I think that you would probably want to err on the side of sooner than later. I don't think that you need to push a dog through till the end only to find out they're not going to cut it. I think that you could wash that dog out, replace them with a dog that is going to cut it, and then put your time and energy into that dog. Like, I recently talked to a police dog handler who has a dog with some real issues. Dog got pushed all the way through the training, and now it's the end of training and the dog's not doing so hot. So maybe that dog should have been pushed out earlier, and then got a new dog, a replacement, to put your time and your effort and your energy into, versus putting into a dog that you pretty much knew wasn't going to cut it anyway. So, you know, definitely document your training so that you know where you might have fallen off a little bit. And then put some effort in that way and put the effort in to fix it. But if you don't think the dog's going to cut it, I think you would want to err on the side of go ahead and wash that dog out of training sooner than later.
All right, folks, and there you have it. You have it from Ted Carlson, professional dog trainer, handler at large. He's been doing it for years. He's done it in several different arenas. And now he wants to show you what he can do for you. So, Ted, nobody's calling in. Nobody has a question for you. I guess you did it just well enough, or they're waiting to call in on your show and give you grief on your show.
Well, good. I hope you did.
You know, either way, we're fine with that. I'm going to let you give those contact points again and give them real slowly in case somebody's trying to write them down. And this time they know that you're about to give them because I'm telling you to give them. And so people have their pens ready and they're ready to write down the information. So give those contact pieces again real slowly, Ted, please.
All right. So, yeah, find me on Facebook. Go to Facebook. You can type in Ted Carlson Dog Training. That's TEDCARLSON Dog Training. Or go to Facebook.com/Ted Carlson Dog Training, all one word. That'll take you to my Facebook page. That's the best way to follow me. I put a ton of content on there. You can also check me out on YouTube. It's YouTube.com/TC Dog Training. Or just go to YouTube and type in Ted Carlson Dog Training. You'll find me right on there. Follow my channel. I try to put up as many videos as I can on there. Instagram. I'm on Instagram. Go to Instagram and follow me. It's at Ted Carlson Dog Training. And then my Periscope is at Ted Carlson. So go on your Apple or Android. Download the Periscope app. Look up at Ted Carlson. Follow me. Turn on notifications, and then anytime I come live for a training session or I'm coming on for a Q&A, you'll get notified right on your phone. So that's definitely the best way to keep following me and keep up to date with what I'm doing. And then at the same time, you know, you can email me, TedCarlsonDogTraining@gmail.com. Send me an email with any question you might have. If you want to set up some training, you want to get your dog to me for a stay-in train, or you want to do a Skype consultation or anything like that, get in touch with me, send me an email. I got all my info on my Facebook page, too. You can send me an email on there. Give me a call on the phone if you want to talk in person. And those would definitely be the best ways that anybody could get in touch with me, and we can go ahead and get your problem solved and your dogs trained.
All right, folks, there you have it from Mr. Ted Carlson. And I encourage you to get in touch with him if you have resonated with his style, his tone, his openness, and his willingness to work with you about your dog. And, Ted, I just want to say thanks for coming on tonight and thanks for sharing. Time you say, hey, man, thanks for having me, and no problem.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks, Doc. Yeah, I really appreciate being on. And I want to thank everybody that was listening. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to listen to what I had to say. So definitely thank you. I really do appreciate it.
Well, all righty, folks. Hey, tune in again. Our next show will be Friday, and we're going to have a veterinarian on the show, which is a real special thing because you always hear me say I'm not talking as a veterinarian. I'm talking as just a dog man who's been in dogs forever. And, you know, I know my way about dogs. You know, I'm into people health and wellness, but they say that these vets are better than people docs because they have to deal with people without hearing them talk. So we are having a vet on, and she's a vet veterinarian, not a vet like myself and Ted are, but veterinarian, and he's going to give us some inside scoop on the way they see things. And her organization called Vets to Vets, and they retrain dogs to give to veterinarians, to give to veterans for different issues that veterans face. PTSD, traumatic brain injury, mobility, and other issues. So we want to thank you for tuning in, and we appreciate you following us and press follow on your pad there where it says follow, press it. And let's be buds. Let's be pals. Thanks for your support of this broadcast. And excuse me, let us know who you might want to hear and what guests you might think would be good guests on the show or what topics you'd like for us to discuss, and we will get it together for you. So thank you. God bless you. We love you. Love your dog, and your dog will love you right back. Good day.